All right. Josh, thank you so much for doing this podcast today. You have been busy, according to my views on Twitter, throughout Missouri, spreading the message of social-emotional learning. And so my first question is, how has that been going, and how are you finding that your message is being received?
Yeah, well, thanks for having me on today, Dan. I appreciate it, and I appreciate the work you're doing. You know, this is, I think there was a time in education where people could, you know, not focus on the emotional states of their students, and then, or, you know, not make it as much of a priority. But I definitely think with what's going on today in education, what our students are dealing with, our staff are dealing with it, you know, most schools are coming to the table today and realizing they need extra help and support with their students and with their staff. And so it's definitely been a popular topic. You know, everywhere I go, I hear that from the staff and from the administration. This is something our staff's been requesting. And when you look at the national data, when you interview teachers on what kind of PD they're looking for, it's always wrapped around trauma-informed care and stress management for their staff and their students. And so there's definitely more people coming to the table than ever before. And I think that is one of the positive parts of this pandemic. Obviously, there's a lot of negative things, but it's exciting that more people are supporting student wellness than ever before.
So obviously then school districts, administrators are acknowledging that this is an integral component of K through 12 education. In order to get to the academic learning, you have to get to the emotional processing. So you kind of touched on that it's really progressed in the favor of looking at other aspects of education, because in my mind, and I think a lot of our minds, is that emotional health is what allows you to access academics.
Yeah, I love diving into the science on this. You know, that kids can't learn until they're safe and connected. And so for the vast majority of our students, they come into school safe and connected and they're ready to learn. But for, you know, for statistically speaking, about 1 out of 8 of our students, they don't come to school safe and connected. And so learning how to meet those students' needs so they have the capacity to learn is, I think, the big missing thing we've been missing in education for a long time. And so to me, it's exciting that we're looking at all learners. We're going to help all kids be successful in our schools today. And, you know, embracing SEL, trauma-informed stuff, is a huge part of that puzzle.
If I look at what people would say, like, who aren't in education, they say, hey, we've never had this problem before with kids being dysregulated or affected by trauma, and we just went through life and did it. How do you see that, the difference between today and the past?
Yeah, I get that question a lot. And the thing I would tell you is that we had those kids before. We just never supported them. If you look at graduation rates in the 70s, 80s, 90s, you know, we're talking 20%, 30% of our students didn't make it through high school. And so we had those kids, we just kicked them out. And guess what? They had children and they had the same issues. That trauma got passed down. They had difficulties learning. And really, this is the first generation we're actually attempting to help those people, you know? And to me, yeah, it is overwhelming right now, because we have a lot of people in our schools that historically wouldn't have been in our schools because of the issues that they struggle with. But, you know, I actually get hopeful, because I think, man, what could it look like 20 years from now, 30 years from now, when a lot of these kids are getting help, are getting the support, are going to be successful community members, adults, parents. And over time, we should be able to wrap our arms around this big, big problem right now. But you know, like I said, I think we're the first generation to actually tackle this issue. So it is a big issue. It is hard. It is challenging. But it's definitely worth doing. It's definitely not a new issue. This stuff has been around as long as people has. And it's just schools are an amazing place for young people to heal and grow. And I'm just excited that so many schools are giving those kids an opportunity to be the best versions of themselves today that historically would have been turned away.
Yeah, I definitely think that's true, that because what we find that in our modern times, graduation rates have increased. You know, students today are smarter, yes, and have more access to information, yeah, than students in any other time period. And it's kind of hard to fight the negativity sometimes, because mm-hmm. it seems like, you know, especially with the pandemic, and well, the students lost so much in that year. But when we look at the overall picture, how much more knowledgeable are kids in the first place than, you know, me personally and other people my age or older in the past? Mm-hmm. I mean, we just didn't have the amount of information coming into school. So,
and schools are so much better. If you look at the instructional strategies, you look at how engaging the material is, you look at our technical schools. We used to, go build a birdhouse. Now kids are building real houses. They're learning real skills, walking out of high school with certifications. I mean, schools are much, much better. I think the big piece of the puzzle that has been missing is how we can help some of these kids that come from really disadvantaged, traumatic, challenging situations. And that's I think the last piece of puzzle missing in our schools, I really do. And that's the part that's exciting for me is, you know, as we learn to support and help those kids, I think all kids can be successful in that public school setting. So,
right. I kind of also think of the example of if you ask people from the past, they say, was racism or segregation, you know, those kinds of things a problem back in the 30s and 40s? And no, we'd have a problem. It's like, it's because you did acknowledge that there was a problem. And when you're not acknowledging something, I guess there are no problems.
Right. Right. Well, yeah. And yeah, when were the good old days kind of perspective, right? And it depends on who you were. And you look at like sexual abuse rates,
right,
and you know, child abuse rates. And, you know, a lot of those things just weren't called child abuse. You know, they weren't, we disregarded sexual abuse, right? And so that's what I mean about kicking the can. Like, we used to just not acknowledge these problems, and they were still real. They were still very damaging to society, you know, and produced all sorts of negative outcomes. But, you know, I think it's not universal across the board yet, but it's exciting for me because I'm just seeing more and more schools that are coming to the table and saying, hey, this kid's struggling. We want to help him. And that wasn't the case, I think, even 10 years ago, you know? And so to me, it's exciting to see the change.
Right. Definitely, I think that when we acknowledge things, it doesn't mean we solve the problem. It just means that now we have the hard work to try to improve the situation for students around the country. So related to the question of the state of SEL, how was everything when you entered the field? And maybe just tell us a little bit about your background and how you got into counseling and all this.
Yeah, so I have a unique career path. You know, I went to grad school, University of Wisconsin-Platteville. I wanted to be a high school counselor and a high school football coach. That was my dream. But I fell in love with college coaching when I was the GA. And so I actually spent about 10 years being a college football coach. And I thought that was going to be my life's work. Wow. But then I got married, had kids, and you realize, you know, that time commitment and being a dad. And I was having a hard time figuring out how to make, you know, that all work. And so I left the field and I took a job in community-based mental health. What I found was that I was equipped to, I really learned how to label kids. Like, that's what my training had taught me how to do. I could use the DSM-4-TR, you know, it's the DSM-5-TR now, but I could give every kid a label and we'd give them some medications. And what I found was I wasn't seeing these kids be successful. And I was feeling burnout. I was feeling frustrated. I knew they had really tough home situations, life situations, and I didn't really know how to help them. But then about 10 years ago, I saw my first trauma-informed speaker. It was very transformational for me, shifting my paradigm away from that, what's wrong with that kid, labeling a kid, to what's that kid experience, how do I help support that kid. And really, the more I learned about this topic, the bigger the impact I made on young people's lives. And I think that's the thing we're all hooked on. I mean, that's why we all show up to our jobs are all challenging, they're all difficult. But man, when you can change somebody's life with, you know, that relationship, it's the best thing in the world. And so the more I learned about the topic, the bigger the impact I had. And then about 3 years ago, I was approached on speaking on it, and I did not want to speak. You know, I've worn a lot of different hats. I've been a school counselor, school-based mental health professional. I've been a teacher for an at-risk program. And I really think schools are where the action's at. I was always drawn to schools because we get so much time with kids, and time is what makes an impact. And so, but I was approached about speaking on the topic, did not want to speak. I don't think anybody wants to be a public speaker, but I knew I had a lot of information that I gathered from amazing resources, and I knew it worked, and so I wanted to share it with people. I really wanted to get Jeff City, Missouri, where I live, trauma-informed. That was my goal when I started, and now I've gotten it's spread all over the country. I get to travel and share this message, and it's just exciting, you know, that other people want to hear it, and that, you know, it can impact kids all over the place. And so it's been a wild journey. It was definitely never anything I, you know, envisioned was going to happen. It was never my plan, but it's been exciting to watch it grow and take off and get to work with amazing educators all over the country.
Tell me about it was 10 years ago, you saw your first trauma-informed speaker, you sprung into action. Tell me how it was for you trying to incorporate your new learning into your position that you were in at the time. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so it, you know, yeah, definitely. It was hard because I started viewing, instead of seeing these kids as a broken human being that had this deficit, that had this chemical imbalance or whatever, how we decided we want to label that stuff in the past, I started looking at them. Their behavior makes sense when you consider their life experiences, right? And when I started looking at the behavior as a fight, flight, or freeze response based on their trauma, like everything just started clicking place for me. But where I had a hard time was, you know, I was working, particularly I worked at one school that was very untrauma informed. So I'm loving on these kids. I'm supporting them. I'm seeing them grow. And then they go to that next teacher and they're not met with that same positivity, right? And then they're suspended long term for a minor infraction by an administrator. And that's where I was like, I would get really, really frustrated because this job is so darn hard if you feel like you got support from the people around you. I really think it's impossible if you're not, if you don't feel like you're going on the same direction with your colleagues. And so at that point, I was really fortunate. I got to work at Fulton Public Schools, the Fulton Middle School, with an amazing principal, Beth Huff, that we went way back with. And I got an opportunity to do a lot of trainings with that school, and they were just doing amazing stuff with this stuff. And they were loving all kids, supporting all kids. We had a lot of challenging situations in our school, but it was just awesome to show up and work with people that got it and were doing it every day. And I saw what I consider miracles. I seen kids recover faster than I've ever seen. I seen success stories with kids that I historically would not be successful in any other school I'd been around before. And so to me, that was a huge part, was, you know, working around people that had the same values, that looked at kids the same way. You know, we weren't judging kids. We understood why they were behaving the way they were. And that did not mean they weren't challenging. It did not mean it wasn't frustrating or difficult. But, you know, we were committed to that process of healing, and it was incredible. So there's a big difference between, you know, working in one of those places that get it and don't. And most people I found that don't get it, it is not because they're bad people, though. It's just they don't have that information yet. And most educators are incredible people, and when they get provided the latest research, the latest science, and they understand this situation better, they come around and want to help kids too. And so it's not a, you know, we do better when we know better. And so I find most people come around when they know better. Because I'll be honest with you, in the past, I've been that teacher. I've been frustrated with kids. I've, you know, used to be the old school football coach trying to pound kids into submission with authority. You know, it just didn't work. And so I've always, you know, come back to, okay, what's working, what's not working. That didn't work. And so I had to figure out, okay, how do I find strategies to actually help these kids be successful? Because kicking them out doesn't work either. You know, I've never seen a kid get kicked out and come back. And it's amazing that that's our solution. And I know a lot of teachers get fired up because they'll be like, they did this and they're back here the next day. And it's like, dude, send them home does not work. Like, I've never seen it work. And so I always come back to what's working, what's not working. Nothing's going to work 100% of the time. Some of these kids come from unimaginably difficult situations, and you're not going to bat 1,000, you know, in this line of work. Anybody working old school, it's not easy. It's not 100%, but it's like, okay, what's work? What gives us the best chance to be successful? That's where my focus is at.
Right. And I think, you know, because practically every single person, not including private schools, but goes through the public education system. Mm-hmm. And even if, and this way my mindset would be about it is, even if they're not 100% successful academically, they're struggling academically, but if the person is in the school, the student is in the school and having good relationships with people and developing that side of their learning, their, mm-hmm. you know, to get ready for life, then that is a success. Because the other way, just kicking them out, that just makes them angrier at the system and less willing to engage with the system. And that's what you need in order to have a functioning adult life.
Yeah. And more time to cope in unhealthy ways. Yes, and more time to cope in unhealthy ways and end up in our criminal justice system. And a lot of times there's so many deficits on so many levels, and it's like you're not going to get that kid necessarily during our window of time in school to be exactly where we want to be at the end, right? But you might have moved them a long way down the road, and that's why I think, you know, we got to look at what is success for that kid. It's going to look different for a lot of people. And a lot of times, man, this healing trauma is a generational thing. Like, we didn't get in this mess in one generation. We're not going to get out of it in one generation. And so That's actually a talk I'm working on right now. It's like how, you know, sometimes somebody goes from a really, really tough, abusive, neglectful situation to being an average, okay parent, and then the next generation is going to be a great parent, right? Like, it doesn't happen necessarily all at once, but all the work we do matters every day and does make an impact. We just don't always, it's not always going to show up instantaneously like we wish it would.
I also find it interesting when you mentioned the football coach style. I find it interesting that, because yeah. I had like a couple of athletes in my class, and it's interesting, and I'm not saying anything about the coach where I work or anything like that, but just in general, when the student would give a lot of love and care in the classroom, student walks out to the field or the court or whatever it is, and the coach's method is, you, what are you doing? And it's like kind of the yelling method like you would see in pro sports or something where, you know, the coach is ripping your head off or something. And I just thought, how much of a contrast is that from what we're doing inside the school by trying to help people by communicating with them in a low emotional way, like not to get all enraged about, hey, you missed a block or something like that. It's like, imagine if we did the same thing in the classroom. It's like, if you know, miss the passing the class or the test by a couple points, what's wrong with you? How come you can't do that? If we use the same method.
Yeah, we jump all over them. Right. Well, the thing up. Yeah. And I think my background as a coach has helped me be successful as a teacher. I think it helped me be successful as a speaker. And the idea behind it is that we're always getting better. So I'm always thinking, how do I grow? I don't blame. I never blame the kid, because as a coach, you're always like, well, you got to get the most out of every situation, and you got to constantly grow and improve. And that's just the mindset that you have. And so, but to get to your point on, you know, yelling at kids, I always felt like my job as a coach was to get the most out of every kid. And so sometimes that means I'm going to motivate them by chirping at them a lot and yelling at them and getting after them, because that kid responds well to that, you know. And then sometimes I would yell at a kid and they would go into a shell and I would get very little. So like, that kid I'm never going to yell at, you know. And to me, it's like, you have to figure out, talk about differential instruction. That's what coaching is. It's every kid's different. I'm going to coach every kid different and get the most out of them. I had players that would come up to me and say, coach, you're always up my tail. You're always yelling at me, but you never yell at that kid. And I'll just be honest with them. I'll say, dude, what happens if I don't get after you? And he's like, well, I'm lazy. I don't want to work hard. I'm like, well, dude, I'm getting the most out of you. That's my job. You know, and then what happens when I yell at him? Oh, he shuts down and he you know, or he explodes. And okay, well, I don't want that. So like, every kid, and I think that's the same mentality as a teacher, you know, what's going to work for one kid, motivate one kid. And that's what makes our job so hard, you know. But if you're interacting with every kid the same way all the time, I don't think you're going to be world class at what you do. You know, I think you have to figure out what works for every individual and figure out how to get the most out of them, whether coaching, teaching, speaking, you know, whatever your chosen profession is. If you're interacting with people, they're all different.
Right. Yes, we've, especially in education, have had for a long time a mindset of one size fits all, because that's what we're doing here. We're kind of trying to get the whole herd through at the same time, and you can't treat people. You have to treat students like you would treat other individuals. Like, you make a great point.
Right.
Every person that we have a relationship with in our lives, we don't come at the same way. Like, I don't talk to my wife the same way I talk to my good buddies, you know, whatever.
Right.
I'm more respectful to my wife as a, you know, the good buddies, they understand that, you know, some of the ribbing and that kind of stuff, which my wife is like, I'm not going to appreciate that. So why would we do it differently in schools, you know?
Yeah, I think there's the idea that fairness, right? Well, if it's fair, you know, if we treat everybody the same all the time, it's fair. And it's like, well, that's not, like you said, that's not reality. You know what I mean? Like, fair is, you know, once again, how do we get the best out of every person? That's just the way I look at it. And so those interactions, and a lot of it's trial and error. You're going to try stuff out and you're going to find that didn't work for that kid at all. That kid made that kid blow up or shut down, or, and you, it is trial and error until you figure people out. But that's the fun part for me, is that constant, like, what makes that person tick? How do we motivate? How do we support, help, you know? Because everyone's different, man. Every person's different. You're right about that. It's not just at work. It's our personal life, too.
Yes.
It's your children. Anybody's a parent. You got to parent them all different, you know?
I imagine, yes. And it's kind of interesting always that within the same family, you have two completely different children, you know, whose mindsets are different. Yeah, I never subscribed to the Bobby Knight style of either coaching or, you know, at any other facet of life, because I don't think yelling at people gets the best response from them.
Yeah, I just think be demanding, not demeaning. Like, you can, I always felt like I could push a player as hard as my relationship was with them. And so if I had an amazing relationship with a kid, I could be brutally honest with them about their performance, and I could push them really, really hard. If I have no relationship with a kid, I'm going to have to handle them with kid gloves until I build up that equity, right? And so, to me, that's the way I always looked at it. Demanding, not demeaning. I never talk bad about a player. I might criticize their performance, but that's my job. And that's where it's like teaching kids growth mindset is so important. Like, I'm never going to be critical of you as a person, but I need to be critical of your performance if I'm going to help you grow. And that's love, you know, getting them to understand being critical of your performance is love, you know, helping you grow is love. That's not tearing you down as a person, because a lot of people, they internalize that stuff. And that's really what's been modeled for them, is if anybody's critical of your performance, that's actually critical of you. And getting kids to understand that difference, or adults, to be honest with you, if you're in a management position, I'm helping you grow. I want you to grow. I want you to be the best you can be because I care about you. That's a learning process for those people.
Yeah, so how would you recommend that teachers incorporate these ideas besides just, you know, being nice and that? What do you find has been good results within the classroom of teachers incorporating some of these ideas?
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, we could talk for 2 hours about this topic. I think the big thing, a lot of people push back on trauma-informed because they think it means the kids can do whatever they want, and that is absolutely not the truth. We need very consistent rules and expectations for these kids. And so it's not kids do whatever they want. I'm always a big believer. I heard this at church once, and I loved it. Rules without relationships equals rebellion. Relationships without rules equals recklessness. Relationships plus rules equals righteousness, right? And I think it's the same way in our classroom, guys. We have to have rules, but we also have to have relationships. And so if we're very consistent, you know, I've seen teachers that are, oh, I feel bad for them. They have a tough life, so they don't have any accountability for that kid. That's not good for a kid either. And then I've seen the other teacher on the other end that wants to drop the hammer all the time and doesn't connect with kids. That's not going to work either, right? And so how do we build amazing relationships with these kids? And I know that takes time, but also have very clear, consistent expectations. And we don't have to get upset, you know, when a kid breaks our expectation or we have to give some discipline. That doesn't have to be an emotional thing. And so I think a big part for me in that trauma-informed movement is how do we make sure kids are very well regulated when they receive discipline? Because they can't accept that information, they can't learn and grow unless they're well regulated. And so that's a big part in my teachings is, you know, it's not that we don't discipline kids, it's how do we make sure they're well regulated so they can receive that information and it can be a collaborative learning thing instead of a punishment thing. Because there's a big difference between discipline and punishment, in my opinion.
Yeah, and then we need kids also to understand these kinds of ideas too, like emotional ideas and some of the words that you use to describe your emotions. I know they have the emotion wheels out there where you can pick more precise words to describe your emotions. And I had an English teacher here describe how she uses like the characters in a novel and then looks at the emotion wheel and says, okay, where is this person at in the wheel? Where are they at emotionally?
That's awesome. That's an awesome. I love that. I'm stealing that idea. That's great. That's great.
Yeah. And then the students learn to identify that and then be able, you know, to me that helps them understand how other people are feeling because they do need to know these things because they're on social media and imagine, I mean, I always imagine the world because probably you and I both, we experience the world without social media. Yeah. And, if you had a negative thing to say, you said it to somebody to the next of you, but that's all the further it went. And now, right. Because kids do that. They're mean sometimes. We're not always using our best brain. But like now, if they do it on social media, it's really hurtful and it lasts for a long time. So there's much more, I think, consequences.
Well, and to add to that, they're not getting the same empathy development that we got growing up because they don't. When they bully and they pick on somebody, they don't see that facial response. And that's how we develop empathy, is we look at another human being and we understand how they felt by looking at their face. And now bullying is almost not exclusively online, but the vast majority of bullying is online. And kids aren't getting that same empathy growth that they got in previous generations. And so, you know, I hear a lot of people say, what's wrong with kids today? Why are kids so mean? And I always come back to, it's not their fault. Like, we gave them these devices And I know these devices aren't going anywhere, but we need way more empathy training than before, because kids are not getting wired for empathy the same way. And you see that with adults. I mean, hop on Facebook and scroll for a little bit and see how awful people treat each other online. So,
right.
Yeah, it's definitely a changed world and a more challenging world for young people because of that.
Right. And this is how humans are. This is how they were before social media. This is how kids are now. And I think some of the good news is that as adults and the children at the same time, students learn these sort of emotional tools where they can identify how they're feeling, how they're displacing anger on other people and all this. Once you start to learn about yourself, it will help down the line. Like you said, maybe in a few generations, this will be kind of normal standard of business. And when we're interacting with others, we have a little more educational information, knowledge, I guess, to enter into better relationships with people. I'm hoping, I kind of see that, like, students who've maybe struggled academically and with getting in trouble in schools, and they had that teacher that kind of bonded with them and got them through the high school, they're the ones, when I hear them talk, you know, after the fact, they're the ones that are the strongest advocate sometimes for the school, because somebody did take an interest and say, hey, I do see you. Mm-hmm. And then that in turn helps with their adult life and how they're going to raise their kids to be different than they were, you know, when they were going through the world without the knowledge that they have gained through just sometimes having a good relationship with one teacher or one administrator.
And then the research backs all that up. You know, if they have one healthy, connective relationship, people are really resilient. And then I can tell you anecdotally, when I travel all over the place, I have people come up to me. We do a little thing in the middle of my presentation. We talk about who made an impact in your life. And I hear teacher, uncle, coach. I mean, it's amazing. It's one person that changed the trajectory of my life. And so, yeah, that it does. It works, man. And yeah, and ideally it would be mom and dad in every home in America. But realistically, that's not the case for a lot of our students. And so when the family fails, I feel like it's our job as educators to step in. We're in a unique position to make that impact because of the amount of time we get with kids. And so, and I think that's the calling. I think that's why a lot of us are in the profession, because we love making that impact in somebody's life.
So what's new with you, or what's next, I guess, with you? You have anything coming up that you're doing?
Yeah, I mean, it's just getting, for me, it's just, you know, speaking is very much a momentum business, so I'm getting more and more opportunities all the time. It's exciting. I'm getting to do a keynote with Desi here in Missouri this spring. But it's exciting that more and more people are coming to the table, more people want to learn about this stuff. I'm always really excited to share the message, and I just feel blessed that people are wanting to support these kids, help these kids, and we can kind of work together to make it happen. And that's, I feel like, my purpose. And so it's been really good, and I'm excited about the future.
So, but you are still employed at a school district, correct? Or
No. Great question. So I juggled both of these up until August of this year, and now I'm doing this full time. And it was just, I'll be honest with you, it was too hard to do both, especially with the travel. And so my school district was great about allowing me to, take unpaid time to do these things. We worked that out when I was working there, but with the amount of demand, I had to kind of pick a lane. And so it's been hard to not be around kids every day, but at the same time, it's been a lot of fun to support the kids all over the place through the educators. And recently I've been doing more speaking with students too, and teaching them how to deal with their stress levels and their mental health and their coping and all that stuff. And that's been fun too, to connect with kids. But
yeah.
But that's I had to choose a path that got to be too much. So
well, best of luck to you. I know that's probably difficult, because it's kind of like gig work, and you got to be out there hustling all the time, I imagine.
Yeah, no, it's, you know, there's positive and negatives to everything, and I definitely miss kids. There's a couple organizations here in town. I'm thinking about doing some volunteer work, because I feel like everything I've learned in my career is from kids. It's, you know, and it's normally the really unique, challenging kids that I learn and grow from. And so I have to find a way to stay plugged in, whether that's a Boys and Girls Club, working at a local alt school. You know, there's working with foster kids. You know, I'm not sure what that's going to be for me, but I definitely have to stay plugged in that way, because that gives me purpose, and it also, I learn so much. You know, give me that really unique kid in your district. That's the one that I feel like I can learn a lot from.
So if schools want to get a hold of you, what's a good connection point for you?
Yeah, so I'm on Twitter, Josh Varner 65. So that's J-O-S-H, V as in Victor, not Barner, Varner with a V, V-A-R-N-E-R 65 on Twitter. Josh Varner Consulting, all one word, @gmail.com. That's another great way to get a hold of me. But yeah, if I can support anybody out there, your school, or if there's a kid you're stuck on, you're not sure what to do and you want to reach out. I mean, I just love hearing from the people. I love, you know, brainstorming with you guys, trying to figure out how to help. And if I can support anybody out there, get a hold of me online and let's connect.
Okay, Josh, thank you very much for chatting with us for these few minutes. Really appreciate your time today, and good luck in your mission to spread the good message of social emotional learning, because it's just as important as academics.
I agree. I appreciate the opportunity to be on here with you today.
All right. Take care.